How do you support this show, own your neurodivergence, and be an ally all at the same time? Check out our merch, somethingshinypodcast.com/merch.
Hello, I'm Isabel, she, her, hers.
And I'm David, he, him, his.
And we're two therapists with ADHD who sit down to have some chats about ADHD. We can't promise we'll stay on topic,
or be professional,
or even remotely mature, but we can promise that you'll end up looking at you or your loved one's beautiful, neurodivergent brain in a shiny new way. This is not a therapy session. This is something shiny.
I love it.
Do you like it?
That's amazing. And can this just be the intro? You saying that and me freaking out about how amazing it is?
Yeah.
And you dropping
could,
your voice?
That could be our
that's
first
so
intro. So without further ado, welcome to Something Shiny.
I'm David. Yeah, it's a dog whistle, right? Like anyone that listens to our show and can tolerate us is going to be able to chill out with most neurodivergent people.
That's so true. If anyone listens to our show and it's like the only show they listen to that's not on double speed, it's like, oh, you're our friend. You're on our team. Yay.
Welcome to Team Shiny.
Welcome to Team Shiny. Oh my gosh. Speaking of David, can I ask a neurodivergent related question or quandary?
Yeah.
Okay. So something I'm like kind of like still digesting the thing we talked about previously around making room for quiet and making room for a new establishing operation, mm-hmm. right? So like how do I, as someone who is geared towards constant motion, stress, pressure, anxiety, I always have an endless to-do list and like, and that's kind of like the only way I've learned to accommodate myself in a way is to keep feeling like I have a fire under me. And so I've been trying the thing that you've suggested where I just kind of actually pause and go, wait a minute, like what actually is what is around me in my environment? Has it changed? Is like, I've even asked myself this question, like, is now the time? Like, is now the only time I can do this is like a big question I keep asking myself. And anyway, this leads to two big questions. First, and maybe in my head, they're related, but like maybe they're not. The first is talking more about like time blindness and just how deep that well goes.
Yeah.
The idea of a not now being a never is like really, really real to me. So like, that's one question, right? Because it's like, it's a setup for me because if I like put something down, I kind of have habituated myself to feel like it's going to get lost and forgotten. Mm-hmm. I have to do it now that I'm thinking of it. Mm-hmm. And I have the wherewithal, the energy to do it. Like it has to happen now because, even the idea of like, I guess put, and this is the second question, which is recognizing, I feel like I've gotten like 10 different messages from like, I don't know, like websites and little newsletters I get from different like ADHD related sites and things all at the same time that are all saying like multitasking, not great. You need to like find a way to stick to one task at a time and do it like in a sequence. And again, I'm like, but what?
Yeah.
This sounds so interesting. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I think it connects to that logic of like, I'm so used to more is better. And I'm so used to feeling like I do better when I have more stimulation. So doesn't it make sense to have five tabs open at the same time?
Right. Because if we close a tab, we'll never remember about the website, right? Like we have to have these tabs open. There's something around the way we see the world and object relations and like, like whether, you know, this is that moment where I think when we put things on a table, it just becomes part of the table. And so if you're you won't notice it again until someone talks about it and then you have to do something about it, right? Like, so there is an immediacy to things. And before I get to like the multitasking thing, which is like huge, like I almost want to rebrand like what multitasking is because the world's so different. I think we have to find new ways to think of time. I know that sounds so weird, but like there is, like I saw this, I don't know, web short or like video, like it was like a TikTok or something where this person goes, oh my God, like 5 minutes, that's like an eternity, right? But if you told me I had 300 seconds, like that doesn't feel like an eternity. And that's the same amount of time, right? Like How? Boom. And when I heard that, I'm like, oh my God, if I had 300 seconds, I don't know if I would think that I had time to like go do something. But if you're like, oh, I got 5 minutes, I'm like, I could change the laundry. I could like go get my jacket, right? I could go like, I could do all these things. But if it was like 300 seconds, it's like maybe the jacket and shoes. And I think like part of it is like acknowledging that we are going to inherently put 15 pounds of material in a 10-pound bag when it comes to time. We will naturally try to maximize how much time, like, you know, what we're doing in a time frame, right? And the end of the time, that's the transition. So it's like, it's of course very hard to stop or complete.
Yes.
Right? Because like, this is that word where like, you know, everything's harder in a transition, but like, that's an amorphous term. What do you mean by transition? It's like, okay, well, like stop it or completing the task. Like both of those have to do, the ending right there is the transition. And so I think the dilemma that we get into is like, how many things can we do in this moment of time? This is where we're getting into that multitasking thing, right? So that we feel like we've maximized like the 15 pounds of material in the 10 pound bag kind of experience. And so then there's, wow, there's a lot of starting of projects or pushing things a few inches down the road. And so there is progress that's happening on like 18 things, but then the same thing happens that would have happened if you put the thing back on the table. All those things that are in motion, they just become part of the scenery. And you're not apt to pick all those things back up again, like 20, 30 minutes later to do another push, because that's our executive functioning problem. So it creates lots of win opportunities for us. And maybe you complete one of the six things that you've been working on, right? But you don't get the reward of completing one of these six things because there are five things you didn't complete.
Exactly. Oh, okay. Sorry, I got
so
excited.
Get in there, yeah.
Did I interrupt here? Okay. So yes, okay, that makes so much sense to me, because it's interesting when you say maximizing, I'm like, yeah, because it's not, like, how to put it, so much of the things I'm referring to here are not necessarily things I want to do. Mm-hmm. Like, if I get really into, like, a random craft project, like, I've really picked up embroidery lately, and I kid you not, when my brain is on hold, like, the hold music of my brain is just thinking about embroidery and, like, I want to try and make that. I don't know why, that's just my new thing. It's my new hyperfixation, maybe. But there is that feels very different to me. Like, things that naturally elicit a type of hyper focus, it almost feels like two separate things. Like, how do I stop when I get into that? Because that also always feels like a loss, like always like a, but I have to put it down. I have to go to bed.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Or like, oh, are you serious? I thought I could do it, but I have to go pick up my sick kid from school. You know, that. Legit, right? So like, and I guess that's just like part of life, but for some reason it feels like it hits extra hard. And then there's a separate thing, which is like, like the thing you just said, which is like, I got 5 minutes before I should leave to get to this appointment on time. And oh my gosh, I'm going to start laundry and I'm going to unload dishwasher. And I'm also going to write a thank you note. And I'm also going to get my coat and shoes on. And then it's not dissimilar. Okay. Tell me if this makes any sense. This is not dissimilar to the way that I habitually overcommit myself. Like, when in doubt, I will add more to my plate, because in that moment, I'm like, yes, of course I want to help you, or like do that extra phone call, or like research that with you. You know, like, it just is always, it's a yes, because that actually feels real to me. That feels like a real yes. It's always enthusiastic consent, okay? And then only when I am faced with doing it and then I feel total failure.
Yeah.
And I feel like that connects to that thing where it's like, actually, I fail at four out of those five things I decided to do. And so I walk around with like the constant sense I'm failing even more.
Mm-hmm.
So is that what you're saying? It's like kind of like, actually, it's like doing the opposite. It's like building challenge, maybe, but then it ends up hitting you harder because you lose more. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you're kind of on it. And I would say like, there's ways that we all need to tackle that differently. This is where the one intervention isn't the intervention for everyone. And I can talk about what I do, right? Like that's the difference. Using technical language, I have to operationalize the tasks. So in the morning, I put on my good day socks. When it's going to be a hard day, when it's a work day, like I have these special socks or good day socks. And when I put on my good day socks, I think about what I have to do that day.
Mm-hmm.
And then I might even make a note and text it to myself. So I have it externalized. I won't remember them. Then if I get a break, I look at those things and which one of them can I do? I don't think I can do them all.
How do you remember you can't do them all?
So that's such a but that bleeds into the other part of what you're talking about, right? Which is like the hyper-focus piece. Like, how do we plan for hyper-focus and how do we deal with hyper-focus? And like, when you're talking about this, like you're getting into the knitting and you're like, you're doing this thing.
Oh,
and like,
sorry, I will correct you.
Please.
Me and knitting, not friends. You have to count stitches. No part of me is able to do this. Embroidery. You get to repeatedly stab something.
Okay, so.
And make a pretty flower.
Facts, really. That's important, right? So like when you're doing embroidery, it's triggering a real sense of hyper-focus. Mm-hmm. Embroidery is your video game.
Yes, 1,000,000,000%. I get such a kick out of like seeing it happen. Side note, it is so satisfying. It's like such a concrete progress bar because it moves real fast.
Now it's you really have fun. You have so much authority as an adult to dictate when you can embroider. What if you didn't?
Well, that'd be really sad. Sorry,
I'd want it more all the time.
Oh, side note, is this what happens with like kids and video games?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Well, there's two things. Wait, that's even more complicated because video games lean into addictive stuff pretty hard. Okay. Yeah, but not just video games, like candy, eating, like all this stuff. Like the more rigid we are, the more we like reinforce counter control. Like the more likely they're going to want the things that they're not supposed to have. So like kids that grow up with candy in the house, like can have candy in the house and they're not like, oh, I'm going to eat it because they're eating, it's normalized.
Oh, okay. This makes so much flipping sense. Okay. Can I like back up because I'm having one of those like goosebumps, I swear it connects in my brain kind of moments. So I had a client recently mention the name of a book and I, you know, we'll put it in the show notes, but the point is it refers to this idea and this, I haven't read it yet. So like, I'm literally taking the cliff notes from like reviews of it. So I'll keep you posted, but the principle is called, it's called low demand parenting. And the basic premise is this person is, I think, a therapist as well as a parent of a neurodivergent kid. And they found that like a lot of the strategies around limiting screen time and being very, very militant about routine and being very, very punitive, you know, like all the things you see and or even gentle parenting, like really like, what do you need? What are your feelings? Was not working because that actually all has a connection to self-regulation abilities and executive functioning. And she's neurodivergent herself. I'm kind of assuming here. Point is, it was very hard. It was like way harder than it needed to be. And so the whole premise is that she took away all the things that she was told she should do. And she just thought about, okay, what are actually the values I want to be instilling and upholding that are also ultimately very helpful for neurodivergence? And she's like, well, one is like building up, a sense of relationship and confidence and knowing that you don't have to do hard things alone and that we're here to help. Another is building up skills around autonomy, like learning the hard, in a way, not the hard way, but like learning like the thing you're just saying now, which is if it's kept from me and someone else is always the gatekeeper and it's the super exciting, addictive thing, I never learn any self-regulation because you're doing it for me forever. And on top of it, I want it more because it's prohibited, right?
Like, is that what you're saying? And you don't get satiation.
Because you never get to that moment where you're like, I'm kind of tired of this. Like, I did enough. Or like, oh, I had too much sugar, I have a tummy ache. Like, you never get to the point where you internally, experientially learn this is not the right amount for me. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right. And I think we also learn like what we can transition from and when. And so like, whatever that hyper-focus thing is, the video game, the conversation, the phone, the social media, the like, whatever that thing is, it's not, you're not allowed to do it. It's when do you do it? And it's not what do you do to earn it? I mean, that can be part of a conversation, but like, what's the baseline level you start with for being, you know,
just like a human.
Well, yeah.
So I know
that doesn't get taken away.
Yes, it shouldn't be used as a punishment, because I've thought about that so much since you said this, I think clinically to me a long time ago, working with a shared, you know, in a shared family or situation or something, like something about that idea of you should never take away what is actually a coping mechanism, a self-soothing mechanism, like a video game or reading a book or interacting with friends via phone or something. That cannot be held as punishment, because then what you're saying is the thing that helps you actually ultimately self-regulate, I will take away from you. And now you have to be without that thing while you're likely more dysregulated. And and so you have to get creative. And it's not that you can't have boundaries and limits, but it's like knowing that you can't turn it into this power struggle, because like we said, you get in a power struggle with someone who's neurodivergent. Oh. Watch the bears eat each other.
Well, right. And I think the thing that I think gets lost is, and even it can be extrapolated from how I talk sometimes, but the emphasis should not be how can I provide enough punishments and consequences to get somebody right. It's how can I get enough reinforcement and wins to get someone feeling good.
Yeah,
but we know that reinforcement and succeeding has so much more to do with behavior modification and behavior change than any punishment. And it's like, and then here's the weird thing. If punishment really, really, really works because it's really intense and really severe, it will only work in the future in the presence of that punisher. So
it's like
trauma,
essentially, right?
Yes.
You just got scared of that person. And so I know around that person, I have to be hyper vigilant and very obedient because they really freak me out. But
yes.
That's not across the board. Oh, now I know too much candy gives me a tummy ache.
No, it's that person gives me a tummy ache.
Yeah, that person's going to shame me or blame me, even just through their tone.
Or, you know, or there could be large rules that I've seen on very innocent levels. I was with a family that I really care about, and their child had burned themselves on the stove. And when they burned themselves, the parents were like, hot, careful. And the kid was like, ah. And so whenever they were about to do something wrong, the parents would be like, hot, and the kid would immediately pull back because they didn't want to get burned, right? And then what I do know is a little bit later, when that child was getting into that I don't care what you say, I'm going to touch this fire anyway phase of life, they started learning a lot of places where they didn't trust people because it's not actually hot. It's only hot when the fire's on.
Ah, okay. This...
And it was so well-intended, you know?
Of course.
It was...
Oh, sorry, I got so excited about that because, gosh, I mean, I'm going to fully admit here, I don't want anyone listening to think that I don't yell, I don't have meltdowns, I don't really struggle with power struggles with my kids. I am continually in shame spirals around my own limitations as a human. So nothing I'm saying, by the way, I am aware that, because I listen to parenting podcasts and I'm always no, but you don't get it. And, I just want you to hear, I am... no way better, able to do these things, especially 100% of the time. That being said, something that I will give myself a little credit for that I think actually I increasingly think is they say I don't want to suggest that this is superpower land of neurodivergence, but I do think that when I am unmasked, I am very direct and I am very blunt in a good way. I think I just stop filtering or masking, because I don't actually have a filter, but I try, right? I have conditioned myself, I think, to just be very direct and no nonsense about certain things. So for example, one of our kids recently had heard us using a very interesting version of a swear and result of an injury, right? It came in actually really appropriate context, and I'll put it in the show notes, but I've always held on to that idea that not dissimilar to the candy, or to the video games, or it all relates. If you grow up in a house where there is no swearing and swearing is banned, by the time you become a teenager, this you through the roof swearing. You swear way more because you never learned.
And you don't really swear well because you don't use the words right because you haven't really practiced them.
You haven't practiced them. And so I remember, I think it was a friend of mine who's also neurodivergent, who I so admire as a human, as a being on this earth, and also as a parent, and they nail, to my mind, they nail a really warm tone in a way that, and side note, they credit that to their neurodivergence because they're on the spectrum and they have to work so hard to figure out which tone of voice to use. that they're just like, oh, I just program myself sort of to go, oh, with kids, I'm really warm. And I'm like, oh my gosh, if I could do that, if I had any ability to pause and check that consciously, that would be cool. But point is, they, in a very, very warm way, are just like, oh, like that's, you know, that's not polite. That will get you in trouble in lots of places. We use it. We use those words often when we have no other words for something that hurts so much or surprised us. You'll notice it's like in traffic or stub a toe, and then they walk through like examples. And it was just so matter of fact. And so it takes away any mystery because it's like, yeah. Oh, that's the thing. And I've explained the thing. So I mean to say, for better or worse, anytime my kids are very curious about a thing, whether it's like their bodies, other people, goodness, like that classic idea of talking about race or gender or skin color, you know, like all these things that I think people are afraid can understandably carry a big load of like, this is important. Like how I talk about this is so important. For better or worse, like I'm very like, kind of like frank about it. And I like always find a book. And it's like, I do think that that, as I say all this, I just think about how much I need to, sorry, I'm not getting choked up. I actually just choked on my spit because I was so excited. But I'm also like feeling an emotion. So it's fair. How cool it would be if I had a little me inside that when I'm about to leave the house could very gently and very bluntly, like my dear friend that I try to channel, go, sweetheart, that is an impossibility. Here's what we're going to do. We're picking one thing and we're keeping it on easy mode. Blink, you know, and that's it. Like how, like, okay, I've talked so much. How does this make sense?
It totally makes sense. Thank you so much for listening. If you ever have that thought where you think, hey, I'm nothing, stop. Remember, you're something shiny.
That's right, just as you are. If you like what you heard and you want to hear more free episodes of this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review anywhere you listen to podcasts. We're on Instagram as Something Shiny Podcast. And if you're looking for more information, useful links, definitions, visuals, everything we can think of and more is on our website at somethingshinypodcast.com. And it's all free. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
If you ever wanted to show your team shiny pride on the outside, that's right, now you can. We got merch. That's right, Something Shiny Podcast merch. Available at somethingshinypodcast.com/merch.